Hello, everyone. This is Anthony Bandiera here, attorney and senior legal instructor with Blue to Gold Law Enforcement Training, bringing you another webinar. This time it's SROs and the Fourth Amendment. We're going to be here for a solid hour. It's going to be a roller coaster ride. Do me a favor, if you're watching this on demand, share this with your friends. There is no restriction on this. Download it, share it, keep it part of whatever. You can do whatever you want with it that you feel is appropriate for your training. And our goal is to train as many cops as we can. Okay, so some quick disclaimers before we start here. Laws and agency standard operating procedures may be more restrictive. Please understand that I teach the Fourth Amendment in these classes. I don't get into the weeds with a lot of specific state issues because it'd be almost impossible. For those who are watching on demand, we have officers from literally all 50 states here watching this and so forth, and I'm honored that you guys are here. If you have any doubts about what you're doing out there, push up the chain. And finally, this course is legal education, not legal advice. But look, let's get down to business. So the first thing is non-searches, right? It's important for us to know when a search occurs and when it doesn't occur, right? Because if a search has not occurred, then we don't have to justify it under the Fourth Amendment. You know, I think like the main non-search is just when private searches occurred, right? You have non-searches occur with abandoned property, right? When people don't have standing, they can't contest that. But I think as an SRO, you are going to, you are going to have some situations where a private person conducts the search and, you know, they find evidence of a crime, right? And so when does a private person become your agent? Well, the first thing is that the government must do something to encourage. They must order it. They must participate in it. They have to do something more than just accept evidence that you hand over to that the private person hands over to you. And also that the person has to be acting on your behalf. In other words, their motive is that, their motive is to help you, right? They're doing it because of you. In other words, it wasn't going to happen regardless. I think a good example of this is a security guard, at a fast food joint, right? And a lot of fast food joints and convenience stores, they have security guards, when it's around when these places are near the school, and they check bags and they say the bags can't be, taken into the place. But let's just imagine a security guard just opens up a student's bag and, there's no arrest, and why would a security guard be looking through people's bag? And they find a gun, they find narcotics. Are we good? And the answer is absolutely yes, right? Because the Fourth Amendment and your state constitution do not apply to private actors. So abandonment. I love abandonment. Abandonment is such a great way to search stuff. Guys, I have seen so many cases where cops are, dealing with abandoned property and they still don't search it. And they think that, oh my God, I can't search it. The guy like threw down the backpack as he was running away. I mean, I know it's his backpack. Don't I need a warrant for that? No, right? If somebody throws something down and then they run away from it or disclaim kind of ownership from it, that's on them. That is their problem, right? The Fourth Amendment does not protect abandoned property. So as the court has held, abandonment is not meant in the strict property rights sense, but rests instead on whether the person so relinquished his interest in the property that he no longer retained a reasonable expectation of privacy in it at the time of search. You can abandon anything except one thing, your kids, until they turn 18. Right? So what kind of abandonments are out there? If they purposely abandon it, have at it, search the heck out of it, right? You know, if they throw the backpack down or they throw something out of a car, that's purposeful abandonment. And the courts are going to allow you to search it. Lost property is not abandoned property. Mislaid property. That's what your state probably calls it, right? Mislaid property. Mislaid property is protected by the Fourth Amendment. because the person did not left their property behind when they were lawfully present, right? So imagine that somebody like robs a convenience store and they leave their wallet behind or their backpack behind on accident, right? That is not mislaid property. That is abandoned property because they should not expect privacy under those conditions. But imagine that same person, you know, accidentally, you know, forgot their wallet or whatever. That would be mislaid property. So the hypothetical here is that a kid is smoking cigarettes. And when the cop walked up to tell him, hey, you can't smoke on campus property and do whatever enforcement action, he saw the cop and you know, immediately, you know, threw it down on the ground. The cop then picked up the cigarettes and looked inside and saw methamphetamine. You know, are we good? And the answer is absolutely. Just call it abandonment. When he threw the cigarettes on the ground, that is an indication that the person does not expect privacy in that property. Somebody online says, hey, can we abandon a car? Absolutely. You can abandon anything except your kids until they're 18, right? So a classic example is that when somebody flees from police and then they kind of like crash in a ditch and they flee the car, and look at things like they leave the doors open. They leave the keys in the car. They are in a ditch. They don't stand by for police to report the accident. I know why they're not doing it, but you know, and they own the car. If they don't own the car, they have no standing to contest the search. But those are not searches under the Fourth Amendment, right? Because the person has no reasonable expectation of privacy when they ditch a car like that. So Mark and Jeffrey, absolutely, right? They can definitely, yeah, vehicles are good to go, right? That's what Mark is saying. So you can, it's very common that people that flee from police abandon their car. Now, I'm going to give you a little pro tip. When establishing abandonment, I want you to ask this question. Do you have anything to do with this backpack? Do you have anything to do with that wallet or that car, right? With this duffel bag? That is a very good way of establishing abandonment. You know, asking the person, hey, is this yours? That's good, but it's not great, right? A better way is to ask them if they have anything to do with it. Now, those are non-searches, private searches, and abandonment. Now let's turn to the Fourth Amendment. The Fourth Amendment, my friends, is short and sweet. It says, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. And no warrants shall issue, but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, in particular describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Guys, the Fourth Amendment is only 54 words, but it only prohibits one type of search or seizure. What type? The unreasonable one. Therefore, if you're being reasonable, you're being 100% constitutional and lawful. Let me give you a pro tip, okay? Generally speaking, you cannot go to court. And when you're asked why you did the search or seizure, say, well, Your Honor, hand over the heart, other one on the Bible, I felt I was being reasonable, right? It's not what you feel, it's what you can articulate. And I have an acronym here at Blue to Gold that is called CREW. If you want to search or seize, consent, recognize exception, or a warrant. Those are the three ways that you can search or seize under the Fourth Amendment. So my friend Melissa says, an offender robbing a gas station and leaving a wall behind. But this of course occurs before police respond. Mislaid property or abandoned? Absolutely abandoned. The person should not be able to rob a convenience store, leave evidence behind, and think that it's going to be protected by the Fourth Amendment. Aaron, wouldn't you have to Mirandize to ask if they have anything to do with it? No, first of all, they're not in custody. Exactly. Thanks, Mark. They're not in custody. Searches are presumed unlawful unless there's a recognized exception, usually probable cause or exigency, right? Okay. What happened in the very, very seminal case in New Jersey versus TLO? Does anybody know who TLO is? What the name is? What her name is? Okay, so I love the AI picks, and Rick, this is one of my favorites, right? I mean, this is definitely screams 80. Look at that hair. Rick and I had hair just like that when we were in our teens. Okay. All right. So, here's what happened. Tammy Lee Owens is smoking cigarettes in the bathroom. A school administrator catches them, and they bring Tammy and her friends back to the principal's office. Tammy is not admitting to the smoking. You know, she's like, I didn't smoke cigarettes and this and that. And the friend is actually admitting to it. So the school official decides to search Tammy's, purse for the cigarettes. While she's in there, they find evidence of marijuana sales with a P&O sheet. So what's Tammy's argument? Hey, you know, you can't get into my bag. All you had was, I guess, reasonable suspicion that I was, smoking cigarettes. And also, this is not a crime, right? I have Fourth Amendment rights. Well, the Supreme Court said that you do have Fourth Amendment rights. No doubt about it, right? And, you know, don't get me wrong, right? So, when sometimes cops will say that teenagers or kids don't have Fourth Amendment rights, that is not true. We know that's not true. But they have reduced expectations of privacy in schools, right? The TLO court held that school officials, and we're going to get into that, school officials require reasonable suspicion to search for evidence of rule violations, and no agency is required. So this is a recognized exception, right? So they're going to lower the standard for school officials. Probable cause is not needed. Agency is not needed. Just reasonable suspicion, right? As the court said, the Supreme Court has instructed that under ordinary circumstances, a search of a student by a teacher or other school official will be justified at its inception when there are reasonable grounds for suspecting that the search will turn up evidence that the student has violated or is violating either the law or the rules of the school, right? So, but remember, that also says that they're violating the law. So could they find, evidence for drugs and so forth? The answer is yes, right? This is part of school safety and discipline, right? So far, so good. Now, ultimately, these TLO searches fall under a category of searches known as special needs searches. Special needs searches are where the government has a compelling interest to search or seize without the normal required probable cause and warrant, right? Because if you don't allow the school officials, for example, to search, then things don't go well, right? I want you to think about the ultimate special needs search, and everybody has been subjected to it. What special needs search, what search has the government done to you with absolutely no reasonable suspicion or probable cause? Everybody on here has gone through it, and my friend Jenny says the airport. That is correct. TSA is the quintessential special needs search. On three occasions, the Supreme Court has recognized that special needs exist in the public school setting, thereby permitting school officials to search a student without a warrant and without probable cause to believe that the student violated the law. Right, see, right? All these other cases. So, reasonable suspicion requires a moderate chance of illegal activity. Now, articulating reasonable suspicion, right, that maybe this kid is involved in some kind of rule breaking. How about their age, right? Their history, their record, right? Maybe the older the kid, the more likely they know that, they try to get into trouble. The prevalence and seriousness of a problem at school. Your Honor, we have a big issue with vapes in our school, right? Urgency of the situation. Clearly, a gun, reasonable suspicion for a gun in a school is going to give you a little more authority to do what you got to do to keep the school safe than a vape, right? Reliable information. Where are we getting this from? A lot of schools around the country have an anonymous tip system. Is that enough to search, enough to go to the kids, you know, and to search their locker? You know, we have to debate that, right? Experience with the student is kind of going back to the kid, the history, right? Okay. So virtually all states use the TLO standard for school exceptions, for school searches, but Washington seems to be the exception because Washington is on a mission to legalize crime, right? They love criminals more than they love their cops. Cop versus school official. This is an ultimate, very important question, right? When does a cop have the authority to search on the TLO? Well, it's tough, right? It's tough. But let me just kind of give you my feedback, right? So it says here that the Supreme Court has instructed that under ordinary circumstances, a search of a student by a teacher or other school official will be justified at its inception when there are reasonable grounds for suspecting that the search will turn up evidence. I think I already said this before, right? So best practice, right? Regular rules. So here's when I think that, you know, that TLO may not apply, right? Patrick says in loco parentis, that is actually a doctrine, by the way, that the courts are getting away from. I am your parent. There's this, especially when it comes, really when it comes to corporal punishment, but I digress. So we're going to talk about metal detectors actually. So, okay. So what is the regular rules? Admin is uninvolved, right? The school does not care. It's not an admin issue. It's not a school issue. The cop is maybe primarily motivated for criminal charges. I'm not telling you this is a deal killer. I'm just telling you things that the courts are going to talk about. No nexus to the school. That one probably is a deal killer, right, guys? If you are doing a TLO search and there's no nexus to that school, I don't see how that works. Police did the search. Look, I am not telling you this one. I'm not telling you that police cannot do the search. I'm just saying that these are factors that just are considered by the court. When does the TLO usually apply? The school is involved. You know, when the school does the search, it's much easier to justify that search and the cop is just kind of watching it. The purpose was to enforce school rules. That's a big one. Full-time SRO. When you have a SRO, you know, a full-time assigned, I mean, if their patch, you know, says Clark County School Police, right? That is much easier to justify in court than it says that San Bernardino, you know, Sheriff's Department, right? I'm not saying that it's a deal, it's just a factor, and school started the investigation. So there are generally three situations where courts talk about these issues. Now, People versus Dilworth, if you're really into this case law, you should look at Dilworth. Dilworth is probably one of those cases that will get cited over and over and over again, right? Okay, and right? So, and Patrick says, is that because we're considered district employees? It's because your mission, right? It's because your mission is to enforce the school rules, keep everybody safe, and so forth. Obviously, you're police officers and full-blown police officers, but it's because you're more like a school official than an attached police officer just responding to a school incident. That's why. So the school initiates the search and the police involvement is minimal. Okay. Where school officials initiate the search or police involvement is minimal, most courts have held that the reasonable suspicion test applies. That just makes sense. TLO is all about school officials. Let's talk about Kaysen versus Cook, right? So in 1983, several students at North High School in Des Moines reported thefts of personal items from lockers. The vice principal and police liaison officer, right, the predecessor to SRO, investigated the thefts. Four students, including the defendant, were identified as being present in the locker area without permission. They are our suspects. The defendant was questioned and searched. During the search, a coin purse matching the stolen one was found. The defendant claimed that her custody rights were violated during the questioning and the search. Now, are they right? Is this going to be a TLO search or a regular Fourth Amendment, you know, regular rules? This is a TLO search. This is motivated for the decorum, for the safety, you know, for the discipline of the school, right? We don't want kids stealing people's stuff out of lockers, right? We do not hold that a search of a student by a school official working in conjunction with law enforcement personnel could never rise to a constitutional violation, but only that under the record as presented here, no violation occurred. So this is pretty easy cases for the court, okay? I'm going to skip that case. So the next one is where the SRO conducts the search under their own authority. Now, where SROs initiate the investigation for the purpose of enforcing school rules or crimes that affect the school, most courts have held that the reasonable suspicion test obtains or right applies. So this makes a lot of sense. This is my, you know, my SROs and my school police officers, right? So Robert says, did they read Miranda to TLO before questioning? Actually, the answer is no. Do you know why? Because Miranda, generally speaking, does not apply to principals. It applies to police officers. So, you know, look, if you're an SRO, you're probably going to have to read Miranda if you're asking incriminating questions, right? But Miranda has not been applied to school officials, even when they're asking incriminating questions. Also, we're not convinced that TLO was actually in custody at the time. So that's another issue. But that's just something. You're welcome. Okay. Again, what happened here was that the defendant was a 15-year-old student at the Juliet Township High School, was suspected of drug possession. They also attended school with behavioral disorders. So two teachers overheard another student, this guy named Weeks, talking about drugs and asked the student to search him, right? And asked the cop to search him. The next day, the cop found nothing on the student, but noticed the defendant holding a flashlight. The flashlight was kind of weird. Like, why are you holding a flashlight, student? Which he seized and searched, finding cocaine. The defendant fled, but was caught and admitted his intention to sell the drugs. Okay. So the search fell under TLO because the officer was motivated to enforce school rules, even if it also resulted in criminal charges. So that's not the main motivation. Okay. Jordan says, if the admin is essentially does an investigation or interrogation, would that be admissible in court as incriminating? Yes. Okay. So first of all, don't forget, a lot of these student investigations by admin, these students are not in custody, okay? They're not in arrest-like custody by the principal. The principal is not making a citizen's arrest. They're just bringing these students in, you know, to the principal's office to answer some questions. The next thing is, even if they were not, they were in arrest-like custody under Miranda, Miranda does not apply to school officials, right? It applies to cops. Jordan says, if admin, I'm gonna calm down a little bit because I have been teaching for 3 hard days straight, and that shouldn't be much for me, but I've been yelling to a room full of 70 cops, and I think my voice is giving out a little bit. Yeah. So if the school officials, so the question is, if the school officials got a confession, can we use that in court? The answer is yes. And they're not acting on agent behalf. That's full. That's fine. That's fine. So Patrick says, admin asks us, you know, school police to conduct pat down searches of male students before they enter the dance. We find something incriminating. Look, I'm going to talk about searching everybody that's going into a school, right? There are some issues with that. You do need a reason to do that. I'm not saying you don't have the reason. So let's talk about it. So the Fourth Amendment does not require officers to use the least intrusive means to effectuate a search, but instead permits a range of objectively reasonable conduct. In the instant case, the officer's conduct fell within the range of reasonable conduct permitted under the Fourth Amendment. Finally, let's save some of these questions too for the we're running out of time here, so let's save some of these questions for the podcast, which is going to be like in 25 minutes. Outside officers initiate the search. So if you have an outside officer that's looking to use your powers as a SRO, they cannot commandeer you, okay? They have to use the regular rules. A great example of this is this case. So what happened here was, I don't want to talk about that case. I'm sorry. That's not the case I want to talk about. We don't have time. That's an in the weeds case. That's an in the weeds case. I want to talk about this case. So what happened here was this guy, this kid, was suspected of stealing a car, okay? And they go to the school and they ask the SRO to search his locker, basically, for the keys to that car. And sure enough, they found the keys. Is that a good TLO search, right? And the answer is no, it is not. Because they're commandeering the SRO to do things that they can't do on their own. So you would need a warrant in that case. All right. As the court said, we're running out of time, so I don't need to read a bunch of quotes, right? So suspicion of searches, let's talk about metal detectors. We actually talk about metal detectors or searching everybody that's coming in to the, to the dance and so forth. Are metal detectors where every student must walk through a search in the Fourth Amendment? Yes or no? Okay. And the answer is yes. A metal detector is a search, right? However, they are usually justified if and implemented in a general manner, meaning everybody goes through the metal detector, right? And you have a reason. Usually you're gonna have a reason. You might keep guns out of school. It's not that it's not a search. It's just that it's gonna be a reasonable search, right? So metal detectors are allowed if the search is conducted as part of a general practice and not associated with criminal investigations to secure evidence, right? This is just, you got good faith here. What about random metal detector or wand searches, right? Rick, can you put the link for the PowerPoint? Okay, these are searches as well. Random searches are constitutional if students have notice. They should have notice that something that they could be wanted, and there is a formula for randomly choosing students. Officer discretion must be reduced or eliminated. So what we're worried about is only picking these guys, right? The alleged gang members and so forth. If you have reasonable suspicion as to them, that's different. But we'd want to be careful about profiling kids and only the males get wanded and not the females and things like that, right? Okay, so the Dade County School Board implemented a policy for random searches using a metal detector to curb weapon possession. During this, they found a gun. The court upheld it, right? Because it was random, it was valid. It wasn't, the discretion was valid and so forth. So upon balancing the student's privacy interest, the nature of the search, and the severity of the need met by the search, this court holds that the board's policy is both reasonable and constitutional. What about targeting a specific student for a metal detector search? Well, look, you need reasonable suspicion for that, right? You need reasonable suspicion because now we're introducing a particularized issue. You're detaining that student. Metal detectors are searches, so you're going to have reasonable suspicion. Now, if you're going to target a particular student, and especially if the wand, alerts, here's some best practices. Escort the student to a private area. Allow the student to explain why the detector went off. Maybe there's a medical issue or something like that, right? Ask the student to remove the item themselves, right? If safe to do so. Same-sex employee conducted a pat down. The search ends when the student no longer sets off metal detector. So this is something to think about when you are doing searches with the wand. Now, somebody asked about school dances. What about more intrusive searches? like patting down all students, inspecting shoes, emptying pockets. What did the courts want to see here? They want to see a reason, right? If the school can articulate a special need for these intrusive searches, they should be upheld, right? So let's talk about this case. What happened here is a student was subjected to a routine administrative search upon entering an alternative learning center. The search involved passing through a metal detector, being patted down, emptying pockets, et cetera, et cetera. They did find, you know, marijuana, right? The court upheld it because of the special need of the school, right? So again, I'm not going to read this all, but the search was a proper procedure. It was established. They had a legitimate governmental interest. The intrusion was limited to just trying to find weapons and so forth, and maybe contraband. We are good to go. Okay, let's talk about canine sniffs. Okay, now canine sniffs under the Fourth Amendment is not a search under the Fourth Amendment. We know this because of Illinois versus Caballes. The Supreme Court said that a sniff that reveals no, you know, item except something that somebody cannot possess is not a search under the Fourth Amendment. Okay. So, but we know that states are more strict, right? You know, states are more strict. So this is Roy Caballes. He's the centerpiece of our case. You know, again, no privacy interest in contraband till the sniff is not intruding on a reasonable expectation of privacy. Now, there's no reasonable suspicion needed for lockers, right? You can walk that dog down the hall in most states, you know, and just see if you can, the dog will alert. There's no reasonable suspicion necessary for sniffing cars in the parking lot, right? And if the dog alerts, you can typically search it under the motor vehicle exception in the vast majority of states. Now, ordering a student to place the backpack on the ground for a sniff is a seizure. So here's my deal, okay? If you are targeting a particular student, right, in their property. Now, look, what I'm talking about here is you're saying, hey, student, put your bag down, right? You student, right? Not just everybody, but a particular student. You should have reasonable suspicion of for that, right? Because you are using discretion, and we want to make sure that, you know, it's done fairly and so forth. At the same time, if there was a, you know, like a fire drill, and all the students had to leave their backpacks in the classroom, and then while the fire drill was conducted, the officer then ran his dog, which alerted. This would be lawful, right? Because the officer is not seizing the backpack. They're not ordering a particular person to put their backpack on the ground. The backpacks are already there. There is no seizure under the Fourth Amendment. You know, telling a student to submit to a canine sniff is a seizure under the Fourth Amendment, right? Also, I don't know if anybody in 2024 and beyond would sniff a student with a dog, but I can assure you that I have some severe reservations about doing that. I don't think courts are going to be very happy about sniffing a student unless you had some high level of, you know, concern and so forth. Miranda, general Miranda rules for adults and juveniles are the same under the Fourth Amendment, right? I'm sorry, under the Fifth Amendment. But states have taken the lead on this, right? States have said, you know what, Supreme Court, we don't like that you're not giving juveniles more rights. So, but at the same time, there is no reason to assume that such courts, especially juvenile courts, with their special expertise in this area, will be unable to apply the totality of the circumstances analysis so as to take into account those special concerns that are present when young persons, often with limited experience in education, you know, in immature judgment are involved. Okay. Now, again, a lot of states roll with it, right? California has a law that basically says that when juveniles are taken to temporary custody, they must be provided with a Miranda-style admonishment, whether or not questioned. Well, that's not required by the Fifth Amendment, right? A Florida trial court suppressed several confessions made by a 12-year-old boy where multiple experts determined that it would be difficult for any 12-year-old boy to understand Miranda warnings and the consequences of waiving. Look, it is what it is, right? This is what the courts are saying. So having different Miranda language for juveniles is recommended. Also, the International Association of Chiefs of Police, the IACP, also recommends that you use a juvenile-friendly Miranda warning, right? So this is just like, you know, using simple words and explaining things slowly and so forth, right? Here's what Blue to Gold suggests. We have, what the feds have kind of used for juveniles and so forth. What about talking to the student about general things before you seek the waiver, right? That's a very good idea, right? I mean, we want to do that. Here's why, right? Number one is, Rick, can you find the juvenile friendly Miranda card on our website and put it on the link? So Blue to Gold actually prints these and you can buy them for like a couple bucks. So, quick, you know, pre Miranda conversations are actually advisable for number one, to build rapport. It's kind of, you know, these kids are scared and so forth, allegedly, you know, apparently, right? To establish, that the student has the capacity to waive. I think that's very important. Now, how are they talking? Do they seem to have mental disabilities? Are they under influence, right? Do they know where they are? Do they know what's kind of going on? And obviously cannot talk about anything likely to cause an incriminating statement. So best practices when you're dealing with juveniles, conversational tone. Don't feed him info just to confirm it's true. That's very important. That's a big no-no in the interrogation world because a lot of kids will just say yes because you're telling them what they should say, basically. Answer his legal questions. Don't blow him off. Don't treat him like an adult where once he waves, you just keep talking to him. Don't promise leniency or make any threats, right? And be careful about accusing him of being a liar. The studies have shown that when kids are accused of being a liar, sometimes they tell you what you want to hear so you don't think that they're a liar anymore. Let's watch this.
How you doing, sir?
Good.
Miranda rights were written to protect key constitutional rights. The right against self-incrimination. The right to an attorney.
You have the right to remain silent.
But when a person doesn't understand those rights, the rights have no meaning. Nowhere is this more evident than with children and youth in the custody of law enforcement.
Do you understand?
Yes.
He has a big heart. He was a sweet little boy that said he would grow up to be a police officer one day. As far as I knew, my son was at school. So when I get a call from the station letting me know that my son was at the station, it kind of blew me away because I didn't understand why he was even there.
In California, the police can take a child out of school without letting the parents know. And even if the child is asking for a parent, the police can decide not to contact the parent.
Youth have the same constitutional rights during interrogations as adults do. The difference is that for many young people, these are like words without meaning.
Just, you have the right to remain silent. Anything you say or will be held against you in the court of law. Okay, what does that mean? What does a 13-year-old know of what that means?
You know, something to consider, right? You need to articulate why you think that, comply with all state laws and so forth, but it is a little tough, right? Let me just show you this one other case that is a little, disturbing. Let's just put it that way.
Criminal charges had to be dropped in Newport News. Prosecutors and defense attorneys say it's because of a detective's, quote, bad interrogation. The action-strong scrutiny took place during a suspect interview, and that suspect was a young teenager, a kid only in middle school. 13 News Now investigative reporter Laura Geller joins us with the story.
In this video obtained only by 13 News Now, you're not going to see anyone beaten. There are no bruises or broken bones as evidence of abuse. But lawyers argued and a judge agreed this interrogation was such a violation of the teen's rights, they had no choice but to throw out the evidence and drop the charges. This teen and his mother wanted you to see this video because they believe the community should know what sometimes happens in these situations. 14-year-old Gabriel is arrested on suspicion of breaking and entering and stealing guns from a home in Newport News. He's brought into this small room at the police department and left twisting in handcuffs for almost an hour and a half.
I think it's very clear that this child's constitutional rights were violated.
It's just the start of public defender David Lee's problems with this interrogation. Detective H.T. Troon comes in and reads Gabriel his Miranda rights. It takes less than 10 seconds.
Now, you have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have a right to speak with an attorney and have one present during questioning. If you can't afford one, one be appointed for you.
Newport News Police Department's own documents on Miranda rights for juveniles advise detectives evaluate the child's understanding. Ask him to repeat them back to you. Troon says,
well, you understand all that, right?
The 14-year-old briefly nods. Troon moves on.
It might be one thing if this was a 41-year-old, long-term drug dealer who's been in and out of prison multiple times. What you have is literally a middle school 14-year-old.
Troon pulls out photos of other kids he says he sent to juvie. He talks about the possible consequences of serving time.
You know where he's currently at? In a grave.
Lawyers tell us that could be a violation right there. By law, juvenile sentencing info is supposed to be private. What happens next is something Lee says he's never seen before.
There are no such thing as co-ed prison. The women that they have in prison, the women, they were not women, Gabrielle. You know what I'm talking about.
He's speaking to a youngster who's 14, slender, with long hair. I think this is a clear suggestion of prison rape.
Troon literally backs Gabriel into a corner, so close their knees are interlocked. And after almost 7.5 hours in a room at the police department with just a few breaks, Gabriel writes an apology note to the victims.
That is calculated to wear down, overcome any resistance to where a child is likely to, under this kind of pressure, admit to anything.
Now, so what's funny about what Brian is saying about the Illinois law, that's actually actually, that didn't go to everybody. So in Illinois, they have to read Miranda without stopping to verify comprehension, okay? I have always been confused. Brian, can you send that to everybody, what you sent to me? I have always been confused about that law. I have no idea why the legislature would pass a law basically saying to cops, you have to read Miranda and don't even have to confirm their comprehension. I don't know. So you saw the video. You have your concerns. It doesn't look good. It's not good. It's not the way we do business. Can parents waive their child's Miranda rights? Well, strictly speaking, the answer is no. Not under the Fifth Amendment, right? And anyway, let's kind of go through this. Let's skip this. Unfortunately, I made this PowerPoint as part of my full day class, and it's a little too much information. I just found it out now, so I apologize. But many states do require parental notification before an interview. That's fine, but under the Fifth Amendment, the kid has to waive their own rights. They have to waive their own rights. Here's an example. You know, you have the right to remain. Okay, consent to search. Okay. So, don't want to talk about that. Hold on. So the only thing I want to tell you about consent to search is this couple cases right here. And so let me share this with you. So, can parents, generally speaking, allow you to search the kid's backpack, right? And the answer is yes, if they have common authority over the backpack, right? If they have common authority over the backpack. Now, this is an interesting twist here. What if you knew that the backpack came from the outside of the house, and the juvenile got the backpack from an outside source, meaning the parents had nothing to do with getting that backpack? You may not believe this, but the parents probably do not have what's called common authority over the backpack and cannot let you consent to search the backpack against the student's will. Okay. However, you know, you just let the parents know that look, it's not your backpack. You didn't provide that backpack to that kid. It's not something that belongs to you or that, you know, to mutually. But they can do whatever they want. It could be a private search issue, but just kind of throwing it out there. What about searching the cell phone? This is a very, very common question. Generally speaking, the parents are likely to have common authority over the kid's cell phone, especially if they can, you know, they have the password, they get into it when they want to. The child knows that the child knows the parents will get into the phone and so forth. What about the apps that the kid put on the phone under his own account? That is debatable. I think a lot of courts are going to want to support the parents searching it, but look, we've been going at this for an hour and we do have a podcast that we're going to do. We're going to answer. There's a lot of questions that you guys have asked, and we're going to answer those questions with Justin Chapman. But before I go, I want to ask you, hopefully you found this information useful. I told you it's like a roller coaster ride, right? You could not, you know, we got so much more to talk about, but we're going to talk about Justin's class, and he is the SRO expert. And I hope that at least gave you something to think about. Also, please give me a review. All right. Good. Thanks, Justin. Please give me a review, right? Let me know how I'm doing here, right? I got bosses to make happy. I got Rick. I want to make sure Rick is happy. I don't want Teresa yelling at me. Okay. Please let me know how I've done and so forth. And hopefully this was valuable for you. Give me a shout out on the Google review and so forth.